Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we're live with health information. Our number, 888-302-3684. So we welcome your phone calls. We got lots to talk about on this weekend. We invite you to call us, 888-302-3684. And a special treat for our New York audience. I understand that due to a sports preemption, we weren't heard at a regular hour, which is from noon to 2 p.m. From 1 to 2 p.m. in New York City. But this weekend, as a special treat, we're being rebroadcast from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. So we welcome a new audience in New York City. The rest of you not affected, because our national audience will hear us at the usual time, which is whatever time that is for you, depending on what time zone you're in. You're here either 1 hour or 2 hours of our program. 888-302-3684. We invite your phone calls. So I'm going to start the program with it's kind of a paradoxical situation, because we know that stress and bad experiences can cause heart problems. Health experts have known for some time that sad events, such as the loss of a spouse, can put you really at high risk for broken heart syndrome. And overwork and stress can literally kill you. Broken heart syndrome feels like a heart attack. It can be fatal if not treated quickly. But there's some new think about what can trigger a heart attack. Most attacks, of course, triggered by episodes of severe emotional distress, such as grief, fear, and anger. However, it turns out that there's a flip side to broken heart syndrome. It's happy heart syndrome. And this has been pointed out by researchers at the University Hospital in Zurich, who said that doctors should inquire about happy events as well as sad when diagnosing heart problems. We've shown that the triggers for broken heart syndrome can be more varied than previously thought. So a happy occasion, like a party or a birthday or a wedding, can turn out to overload the heart's nervous system, trigger a heart attack or a dangerous arrhythmia. So it turns out that it's true. You can actually be too happy. The researchers characterize this as a sudden temporary weakening of the heart muscle. It may cause the left chamber of the heart, that's the ventricle, to blow up like a balloon. And this problem affects predominantly women. 95% of all patients in the Happy Heart Syndrome database are female. Their average age around 65. So, both happy and sad life events. They seem to be at opposite ends of the spectrum. But the final common denominator is the heart. And the heart indeed can be afflicted. So keep that in mind. 888-302-3684 is our number. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Got glutathione? Probably not as much as you once had. As we age, our glutathione levels drop dramatically, and that is a very big deal. Why? Because glutathione is your body's master antioxidant. It is unique in its ability to repair and rebuild cellular damage caused by free radicals, exposure to environmental toxins, and the aging process. The less glutathione in your body, the more vulnerable you are to health issues. Backed by 20 years of published research, RegActive contains ME3, a patented probiotic proven to naturally stimulate the body's own production of glutathione. RegActive is brought to you by Essential Formulas, renowned for introducing award-winning Dr. O'Hara's probiotics 15 years ago, and meets the criteria of the same high standards and trusted time-proven results. Revolutionary. Remarkable. RegActive. Look for RegActive at Vitamin Shop, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide where Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are sold.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. Take us back 15 years ago or so to the date 9/10/2001. That's a very significant date because it wasn't a very big news day. The next day, however, would belie that fact. That was 9/11. But on 9/10/2001, the headline in the New York Daily News was Killer Mold. And that's because, late summer, early fall is a moldy time of year in the Northeast, and lots of people are afflicted with mold-related symptoms, severe allergies, and even more profound symptoms, immune suppression, brain fog, feeling really ill, getting sick all the time, susceptibility to respiratory infections. And so it was that this week we did a podcast. Some of you may be aware that we do podcasts. We're not just on the radio. We also do weekly podcasts that you can dial into by going to drhoffman.com. We talked to Steve Levy, who's an expert on mold, and we explored the possibility that your home may be a mold factory or alternatively your workplace, and you literally may be getting sick from your environment. And mold creates problems in two ways. You can be allergic to mold. Okay, that may cause ordinary symptoms like sneezing, wheezing, burning eyes. But you can also be affected by something even more serious, mycotoxins from mold, which have a devastating effect on the immune system. They can literally kill you. I know of cases where people have been extremely sick, mysteriously ill, no clear-cut reason. And then a little detective work was done. It was found that behind the baseboards or the sheetrock was concealing mold infestation. And that's especially concerning when the mold is dark, fuzzy mold, like Stachybotrys. That is truly a killer mold. It actually has been the cause of having to clear out buildings and demolishing them. So this is a real serious problem, and you may want to become aware of it by checking out our podcast at drhoffman.com. Listen to the one we did this week with Steve Levy. I think you'll find it very interesting. All right, 888-302-3684 is our number. And let's talk to David, who's in Iowa. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I'm glad you're on today and live.
Yes, indeed.
I've got two questions in a way. I've got a question about the lungs, and then also I have a question about the mind and the nervous system.
All right. Well, let's see if we can tackle those.
Okay. Well, we'll try the lungs first. If a person has emphysema, I was wondering if there's any drug that you can take along with, besides the inhalers and all this stuff, if you have the first beginning of it. Rather than to not smoke, which is absolutely absolute.
And, were you a smoker?
Yeah, one time. Yeah, quit.
Many of us were. Yeah, I was smart enough about the second year in college to bag that bad habit. But
probably not soon enough. But I would advise people that are listening they need to do it.
No question. So when it comes to emphysema, yes, there are some things you can do for nutritional support. You know, the drugs that are used for emphysema are not that good. They mostly consist of bronchodilators, which work better in asthma. And there are other types of medication that reduce inflammation. And they're steroids. Steroid sprays into the lungs reduce the inflammation that ultimately causes the lungs to be damaged. And it's a progressive thing, and steroids can slow that progress to some extent. But the medications for COPD are pretty unsatisfactory. So what can you do alternatively? What can you do nutritionally? Well, it turns out that even consuming a couple of servings of fish per week slow the progression of emphysema. That's pretty exciting. That means that, you know, if you took fish oil, you'd probably get an even fish oil capsules. You might get an even more profound benefit. So definitely, I have patients who, you know, we were talking earlier about 9/11. I have patients since I'm in the New York area who are on the pile. They were first responders at Ground Zero, and they inhaled all that bad stuff, and now they have severe lung problems. And we use a protocol with them where they're taking high doses of fish oil. And they also take NAC, or N-acetylcysteine. Now, NAC is a precursor for glutathione, which is very effective for reducing inflammation. It's the body's premier antioxidant. The body makes it, but usually not in sufficient quantities to quell severe inflammations. These are patients who are also good candidates for intravenous glutathione, if they can manage that logistically. Or they can also take glutathione inhalation. They can inhale glutathione, which is actually very helpful for chronic lung problems. And that's something that's only available via prescription. It's not something you buy in a health food store. So those are some of the things that can make a difference. I would imagine, a whole complement of antioxidants, zinc, selenium, natural anti-inflammatories like curcumin. These could be beneficial too. So let's tackle your second question if we have time.
A quick question. Have you heard of a Dr. Moto?
No.
Okay. Please look him up on the internet for me. I want you to read that. He covers an area of the mental attitudes, and it's so interesting. I fell in love with it because I believed it all the time, but I couldn't find anybody who believed in it. Okay.
What does he have to say in essence, in a paragraph or so?
All right. He said that if you concentrate on like love and health and all the good aspects of life, that your body, you can be healed from things.
Right.
And he had an experiment called the rice experiment, where he put two beakers of rice together, the same rice in two beakers, he put the same water in it, he labeled one love and one hate, and the one that was hate, love, turned moldy and passed away, and the other one...
I thought you were going to say he yelled at one beaker and he kind of said nice things to the other.
No.
So listen, there's no question that attitude has a lot to do with wellness and longevity, and stress has a definite harmful effect on the immune system and on many organs, the brain, the heart. It's pro-inflammatory. There are many studies that demonstrate that. However, there are exceptions to the rule. I can recount my own grandfather, who lived to the age of 101, who was a crusty old guy. He used to, argue and fight and yell, and, driving with him when I was a little kid was a nightmare because he would scream and yell at all the other motorists. And somehow he didn't get ulcers. He gave ulcers. And so he certainly was an exception to the rule, and lived to the ripe old age of 101. Maybe would have lived 121 if he hadn't had all that aggravation. But thanks very much for that call. All right, so here's an item that, we're seeing a turning of the tide from the belief that saturated fat is the villain and that we should all be consuming high-fiber cereals and plenty of fresh juices and things that ultimately raise our carbohydrate quotient. It turns out that saturated fat is now being vindicated in recent studies. So here's a new study in the journal Progress in Cardiovascular Disease. St. Luke's Mid-America Heart Institute cardiovascular research scientist James D. Nicolantonio and James H. O'Keefe, M.D. examined the question of whether we should focus more on sugar or whether we should focus more on saturated fat as the culprit in cardiovascular disease. And what they found was quite interesting. They also were joined by researchers from Albert Einstein College of Medicine, my alma mater, where I went to med school. And what they found was that sugar consumption, particularly in the form of refined added sugars, are a greater contributor to coronary heart disease than saturated fats. They say that the problem is we took a big wrong turn when we decided to replace saturated fats with something else. Because, look, you reduce the saturated fat, yeah, but people are hungry, so what are they going to eat? Saturated fats provide satiety. So in an effort to protect consumers or meet consumer perceived demand for lower fat foods, manufacturers switch to starchier, sugarier alternatives. And what happened was that we had a disaster. We had a major uptick in obesity statistics and a major uptick in diabetes. And so this was a major, major fiasco. When carbohydrates, particularly refined carbohydrates like sugar, replace saturated fats, they say, what happens is HDL falls and triglycerides rise, creating a very negative impact on the lipid profile. So amazingly, less saturated fat, less cholesterol, but hey, your cholesterol soars, goes through the roof, and that ain't good. So researchers are also concerned in particular about added fructose. All right, high fructose corn syrup has made it mainstream in America. It's the major sweetener that we use in everything from ketchup to soft drinks. All processed foods are laden with high fructose corn syrup. And in particular, high fructose corn syrup, worse than sugar, raises triglycerides even higher, causes leptin resistance. Leptin resistance increases cravings, promotes fat accumulation. And we're off to the races towards serious health problems. So there you have it. The tide is turning. We're focusing now more on sugar as the culprit rather than fat. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684 is our number for Intelligent Medicine.
You're listening to Intelligent Medicine, brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. You can find a lot more on Intelligent Medicine at drhoffman.com. Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine podcast and automatically get a new episode 5 days a week. And please rate and review the podcast on iTunes to help us spread the word about Intelligent Medicine. Also, go to drhoffman.com and click on the store to buy your supplements via our convenient internet portal or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. Finally, become a patient at the Hoffman Center. I'll personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the Intelligent Medicine principles you hear about on the radio show and podcast, or make an appointment with Layla Mudin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Thanks for listening and for helping to spread the word about Intelligent Medicine.
Do you know there is a silent killer living among us? High blood pressure. It affects nearly 1 in 3 Americans and is a primary risk factor for stroke and heart attack. The CDC estimates that almost 20% of those with high blood pressure don't even know they have it. That's not surprising, since high blood pressure or hypertension is often symptomless. Research studies have shown that a daily dose of aged garlic extract can safely and effectively help to reduce blood pressure, as well as benefiting a number of other cardiovascular risk factors. And the most researched and highly respected aged garlic extract is all-natural Kyolic aged garlic extract. Odorless and organically grown, Kyolic aged garlic extract has been clinically tested to support blood pressure and cardiovascular health. So, along with getting your blood pressure checked regularly, get Kyolic Formula 109 for blood pressure and cardiovascular support today. Available at Vitamin Shop, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. We invite your phone calls, 888-302-3684. And or perhaps you're not disposed to call during this hour. You're busy or just don't want to get on the air live with thousands and thousands of people listening. Perhaps you're a little shy. You can email us your question to radioprogram at AOL.com. And we won't be able to answer every question. We're not an answering service or a free consultation bureau. But we will use your questions as the basis for our weekly Q&A with Layla. You can listen via drhoffman.com. It's our weekly podcast wherein we answer listener questions. And we get some fascinating questions, and you can get the answers by listening to our weekly Q&A with Layla podcast. All right. This summer, and, you know, it's spring is upon us. And pretty soon it'll be warm, and pretty soon people will be shedding their layers and getting out in the sun. But this summer, tanners will face a dilemma because we know that sunlight is beneficial. It helps generate vitamin D in the skin. However, tanning is associated with a higher risk of cancer. All right. So what do you do? Well, you slather on the sunscreen. Fine. You won't get cancer, but then you won't get any vitamin D production. Or alternatively, you go bareback. You don't use the sunscreen. And then your skin burns, and it photoages, and ultimately higher risk for deadly melanoma or other forms of skin cancer. So researchers at Boston University Medical Center have developed a process for altering the ingredients in a sunscreen that maintains its SPF, its sun protection factor, but incredibly allows the body to produce vitamin D. It's pretty good stuff. So you get all the benefits of sunlight and none of the downsides. Because I've inveighed against sunscreens before, because first of all, they give people a false sense of security. So they slather on the sunscreen. Pretty soon it wears off or it's ineffective. And then they still get cancer. And some of the sunscreens may block UVA, but they don't block the more deadly UVB. So, and many of them are laden with chemicals, or they have nanoparticles, which can enter the body and cause all manner of harm. So sunscreen's not my favorite thing. Suggestion is that you prudently limit your sun exposure. Build a base tan. Don't get burned. But if you want to use something to protect yourself against the sun, use a good old-fashioned zinc oxide. It's not very sightly, but it's safe. It's not chemically laden. The particles are large. They're not nanoparticles. They don't penetrate the skin. But anyway, this researchers say that there are several chemical compounds that are typically used in a sunscreen that efficiently absorb varying waves of UVB radiation. So they then tweaked the sunscreen, slightly changing the ingredients, and created something called Solar D. It was designed with compounds with differing filtering compositions to maximize vitamin D production while maintaining the sun protection for reducing erythema or burning of the skin. Now, the author of this is fascinating because this is an amazing guy, Michael Hollick, who was one of the first to sound the alarm about an epidemic of vitamin D deficiency. He is one of the world's authorities on vitamin D. And he's a fascinating guy. He actually got in trouble because he told people that they should get out in the sun. And for a dermatology, for dermatologists, this is heresy. And he was virtually ousted from his position at Boston University School of Medicine. But he's fought back, and he's maintained his credibility, written major scientific articles, and it turns out he was right about vitamin D. But here, it's sort of like you can have your cake and have it. You can tan safely, get vitamin D production, and not to get the burn that's associated with cancer risk. So Solar D is currently available in Australia and will be available in the U.S. in summer of 2016, thanks to Dr. Michael Hollick. So look for it. An incredible breakthrough, if indeed it works and if it turns out to be as safe as is said. But I got to say, Michael Hollick has, for me, he holds a lot of credibility. All right, 888-302-3684, if you care to call us. All right, here's an item that it has to do with the new trend towards genetically tailored diets. Now, what's up with that? Well, you know, it's different strokes for different folks when it comes to eating, and it's different strokes in terms of how people manage to successfully lose weight. Now, there's no question there's some people who thrive on a vegan diet, ultra low fat, lots of fresh fruits and vegetables and grains, and no animal protein whatsoever. They do fine. They feel good. And there are other people who are on those types of diets, and they are sallow and exhausted, and they don't lose weight. Amazingly, they've restricted their diet. There's so almost no fat, and somehow they don't lose weight. And conversely, same thing with people who are on a very like an Atkins diet. Some people just feel horrible. Other people thrive. Some people lose weight like crazy, and other people get stuck. So what's up with that? It has to do, to some extent, with our genetics. We know that our genes govern the way that we respond to food and potentially can give us a guide as to what's the healthiest diet, right? And perhaps some people have very high risk for cardiovascular disease. They need to be especially careful. While we tend to minimize the importance of cholesterol, for a small percentage of the population, cholesterol may make a difference. For others, they're very, very, very sugar sensitive and carb sensitive. They really have to cut the carbs because they're so predisposed to diabetes and obesity that they have to be on the lookout constantly for carbs. So I'm reading an article here which talks about the genetically tailored diets. We can now measure the genes. We can catalog them for so many of our different traits. And now you can get tests. Some of them are direct to consumer. Some are done through doctor's offices. I've tried out some of them in my office. Fees are typically around $100. Could be more. Depends on the company. Genetic nutrition companies now offer tests which provide DNA-tailored diets or purport to. This is called nutrigenomics. This is a major new field of research that looks at the interactions between genes, food, metabolism, and health. And we now know that there are at least 140 locations in the human genome involved in controlling fat and body weight. So it's not like you got the fat gene or you don't have the fat gene. It's not simple. There are 140 genes, and you can imagine all the different ways in which they can interact. Plus, there is the fact that heredity is not destiny. There may be some who are born with a BRCA CA1 or BRCA CA2. That's the so-called breast cancer gene. They ultimately don't get breast cancer. There's the APOE4 gene, which is a gene that predisposes highly to Alzheimer's. But it's not necessarily the case, because with certain lifestyle measures, perhaps certain supplements, we can take people with APOE4 and we can guide them safely to become centenarians without any decline in mental function. So it's complicated. A lot of genes. Question is, how accurately can we process that information into meaningful data that can guide people's diets? One skeptic, quoted in this article, Dr. John Mathers, professor of human nutrition at Newcastle University, says, you know, to get reliable answers, I'm quoting him, you need to do clinical trials with hundreds of people over a few years with costs that are in the millions of dollars. And that's out of reach for most of the startups in this business. So what they're doing is they're making a lot of assumptions, but they're not testing them out. For almost for each gene, you'd have to do extensive clinical trials. Imagine if you have, if you're testing for dozens and dozens of genes, and then you got some that are positive, some that are negative. So what does it mean? We don't yet know. So they did it. They did some research. They compared personalized nutritional counseling, where you take a history and you sit with a person, maybe you look at some blood tests, versus DNA testing with personalized counseling based on the DNA testing, and they compared the results in terms of whether people achieved their weight loss goals and got healthier. And what they found, there was no difference between those in the group who looked at their DNA and those who didn't. So the key is personalized nutrition. That's kind of what we do at the Hoffman Center. Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin and I work with patients to optimize their diets for whatever medical condition they have, or, you know, perhaps people just want to know, what should I be eating? What should I be taking as supplements? That seems to be, at this point in time, a better approach or an equivalent approach. There may be a point in time where genetic testing really makes a difference, really can pay off. I'm not saying that it's irrelevant. It's just not quite ready for prime time. A position paper from the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, the world's largest organization of nutritional professionals, states, quote, that the use of nutrigenetic testing to provide dietary advice is not ready for routine dietetics practice. And one expert quoted in this article says that a diet based only on DNA is the equivalent of a horoscope. Okay, it's like, it's kind of random, all right? So, you can look at genes that are involved in the liking or disliking of a dozen foods, including artichokes, bacon, broccoli, coffee, dark chocolate, and white wine, tasting genes. They're genes that measure whether you have a fast metabolism or a slow metabolism. They're genes that tell you whether you have early satiety, whether you're satisfied with moderate amounts of food or you can't turn your appetite off. They're genes that tell you whether you have a predisposition to high or low levels of adiponectin, which controls appetite. But ultimately, I've tried out some of these tests on patients and found the results mildly satisfactory and not really ready for prime time. So genetic testing, it's out there. Check it out if you like. But we await more evolution of this science before it's ready for practical application. 888-302-3684 is our number. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman. The aforementioned newsletter has what I consider a pretty interesting article that I wrote this week on paleo pitfalls. If you're undertaking a paleo diet, you may want to read this because unless you are aware of some of these potential pitfalls, your paleo diet may not yield the benefits that it's supposed to. Among the problems on a paleo diet, a paleo diet is not just eating big brontosaurus steaks. You know, remember the Flintstones, Fred firing up the grill to prepare a huge dinosaur cutlet? Well, that's not really what the paleo diet should be about, because paleo humans, our ancestors, got a fair amount of meat in their diet. There's no question they weren't vegetarians by and large, but meat was relatively scarce. If you got lucky, you bagged a big animal, and for a few days, the entire village got to gorge themselves. But mostly, the diet of hunter-gatherers was far more prosaic. It consisted mostly of locally gathered small game and lots of vegetation, really high-fiber vegetable foods, some fruits, but nowhere near as sweet as the fruits that we can now buy in the supermarket. So in terms of your paleo diet, where do you want to go? Do you want an ultra-low-carb paleo diet? Do you want a paleo diet that is rich in starchy vegetables. You can have it either way. It depends on what your goal is. You want to lose a lot of weight? Well, maybe, just maybe. You got to look at loopholes on the paleo diet, because you can eat a ton of nuts on the paleo diet. That might not be so good for you. And oh, by the way, the paleo diet, the true paleo lifestyle, involved a lot of exercise. Hunting down and tracking down all that food involved a lot of walking, a lot of heavy lifting. And if you're not engaged in a lot of paleo exercise, you're not truly on a paleo program. So those are some of the considerations in my article in the newsletter this week. And you don't even have to subscribe to the newsletter to read it. Just go to drhoffman.com and check it out. But you may want to get the newsletter in your mailbox, because it's got great information delivered fresh to your inbox every week. All right, let me vent a little bit about an article in this week's Wall Street Journal, how your supplements interact with prescription drugs. And while there's an element of truth to this, I take issue with the emphasis. The emphasis is on the perils, once again, of supplements and how supplements can be harmful in yet another way. The article starts this way: as millions of Americans consume over-the-counter herbal and botanical supplements in a bid to boost health, there is increasing evidence that these products can interfere with a wide range of prescription medications used to treat everything from cancer to depression to high blood pressure. Studies have found that a greater number of supplements than previously thought may affect the way certain enzymes in the body metabolize drugs. Some supplements may inhibit the enzyme's ability to break down a drug and clear it from the body, thus causing the medication to build up to potentially toxic levels and even cause overdose. Other supplements may increase the rate at which a drug is broken down, clearing it from the body too quickly to be effective. And it turns out that this is true. This is true, that there are drug-nutrient interactions, that certain drugs can potentiate the action of medications, an example of which is grapefruit. Grapefruit actually causes higher levels of many medications. St. John's wort, conversely, can lower the levels of certain medications. And you have to know about this. This is actually one of the reasons why St. John's wort, once very popular for the treatment of depression, people are a little concerned about it, because many people who are on other medications, they don't want their medications to be affected. So you got to know this in prescribing herbs and supplements. And this is something that we in the field of integrative medicine, we study very intensively. We actually have databases on our computers that can help predict these interactions. So what I quibble with is with the emphasis of this article, which is basically that there are all these great drugs out there. You don't want to mess things up by taking a supplement. The problem is that there are vastly, vastly more deaths and injuries due to the correct and appropriate use of medications. Medications as prescribed cause all kinds of unforeseen side effects. Also, I would say the converse problem is greater than what they're stating here, which is that so many medications deplete nutrients. Metformin, medication used to treat diabetes, depletes vitamin B12. It's important to take B12 when you're taking glucophage or metformin. When you're taking an acid-blocking medication, Prevacid, Prilosec, Nexium, depletes magnesium, potentially B12, and on it goes. There's so many of these interactions, statins and CoQ10. And that, I think, is a more important emphasis than the theoretical risk that exaggerated risk that certain supplements can mess up medications. It's true, and we need to be aware of this, but the article was too heavily balanced towards the perils of supplements. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're back with more of Intelligent Medicine. 888-302-3684 is our number.